Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour, between the 8 and 9 p.m. hour on a Wednesday, in one of possibly the greatest months in human history, February.
Wonder why.
That is one of the greatest months in human history. So many great Americans are born during February. There are a few others that are outside a little bit, but fewer called. Many are called, fewer chosen, and even fewer can be born in the month of February, because there is, what, two less days? So it really is a precision baby-making thing, I would suppose. But I'm Citizen Payne. Can I give you your introduction?
Yes, go right.
All right. I'm Citizen Payne, otherwise known as the son of Kay Thompson on the Kay Thompson Live. Here's Kay Thompson, everybody. Golf clap, if you will, at home.
Yeah. Listen, why do you think that Eric is saying February is so important?
It's just an objective opinion.
Yes, objective opinion. Yes. Eric Payne, movie lover, movie actor. His birthday is in February. As a matter of fact, what's today's date? Today's not February.
14th.
No, it's the 14th.
So today's Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
Happy
Valentine's Day to you. One thing I want to do is announce Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant. Everybody probably remembers her from NBC. A famed psychologist, wrote a lot of books, you know, about relationships, and she became very popular, you know, several years ago. Good friend of mine, very, very, very good friend of mine. She passed away this week, and just about a day or two ago, I guess. Just wanted to let people know about that. She will be greatly missed. She was quite a voice for our community.
And we just had Aunt Gwen, as I refer to her, because that's what she was, like an aunt to me. And many of you that are, if you listen to the show, you'll see that we had Dr. Grant on our show about 3 weeks ago now. And she was very, as she was, energetic and very informing. And informative and really uplifting, which is what she was doing, giving her advice column in Essence magazine for all those years to a lot of readers of Essence and just people in general. So we're going to miss her truly.
Yeah, and also, you know, she frequently was a frequent visitor when I was on WLIB, PLS, you know, in New York, and she was wonderful then, brilliant personality. What a big personality. And she really added to women in the Black community. Her voice was heard, was known, she was loved, and she was absolutely beautiful. So, saying that, what do you know, Eric?
Well, you know, I just want to, like, talk about a couple of things. You know, we are in the news, as we all know. My mother's looking like to talk about Trump, but I'm on a Trump watch. Call it the Trump Chronicles. But before we move forward, I'm tripping here. Let me bring in our co-host, one of our co-hosts, resident guest, Brother Byron Saunders. How are you, Byron, this evening?
Well, it's happy Thanksgiving. Happy Valentine's Day to you and Kay. And, oh, my goodness, the loss of Dr. Gwendolyn Goldsby Grant is a huge and tremendous loss to our diaspora. An amazing woman. Who gave us much and much truth to wisdom. And every time she spoke, you would pay attention to her. And so thank you for letting us know that. And, of course, Valentine's Day. And my heart's broken today, guys. That tragedy in Florida is 17 dead children, another gun violence. You know, and we're supposed to be celebrating love today. And this is Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent, where, you know, that season where liturgically Christ spent 40 days in the desert confronting the devil or confronting Satan and the temptations of life. And, oh, my goodness, we have some serious temptations out here that I'm sure we'll get into. But we're going to talk about movies today, I hear. So you know I'm loving that. But anyway, anyhow.
Just a little bit of the topical news, you know. As I said, Trump Watch, I wrote on the thing here, or the Trump Chronicles, because you got to keep an eye on this guy every day. And it's entertaining. I have a friend, Donna, who was in the news. And, you know, we had a discussion one day, and it's like every kind of got to take a break from, you know, the constant barrage of negativity that this current president has brought to the country. And it's such a contrast how it seems everything is turning towards the negative side, right, since this man has been in office.
Exactly.
And, you know, the religious people talk about the forces of good and evil in the world, and it's a very real thing. And there's a lot of evil out there. And in my opinion, this individual, whether intentionally or not, seems to be bringing out a lot of division amongst Americans, and certainly not encouraging people to be understanding, but encouraging people to be divided and ununderstanding and stubborn and uncompromising. And it really is a terrible thing. You know, I'm reminded, this being Black History Month, of, you know, of years ago during the Civil Rights era. And we talked about this the other day, Ma, of going to Symphony Hall around the 60s, 67, 68, probably after Dr. King was assassinated. And we went to Symphony Hall to see a documentary about the movement at the time.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the lights went up and the movie went dark. And they said, everybody, we're going to have to leave the theater now because we've had, you know, and someone called in a bomb threat. I remember that. I was there. I also went on a march or two with my mom and dad back then. So when these people want to talk about all these situations and Trump this and talk about just these racists that have come out the woodwork and crawled from under a rock and that really support this guy, it's bizarre to me. But I'm not going to write off all Trump supporters as racist, because I have some schoolmates that, you know, I'm friendly with on Facebook. And so a lot of them support Trump. And it's interesting to me, and I know these guys for a fact. These are my boys, you know, from growing up when we moved from Newark to Maplewood. And these are guys whose house I slept in, they came to my house and had sleepovers. And I know that they weren't brought up that way, because you can tell by the reaction of the parents when they bring in a Black friend who's new in the neighborhood, which is not many Black friends around. You can tell by the reaction of the parents usually whether that household is one that's liberal or accepting of all people. And a lot of these individuals, pretty much all of them, obviously I wouldn't be hanging out with the ones who weren't accepting of me. A lot of these guys, their parents, you know, I never felt foreign. I never felt like I was unwelcome to a certain degree. And so I was kind of writing these people off that are Trump supporters as racist, but I can't. But I understand that when we became adults, how the tribalism seemed to kick in. Of going your separate ways. You know, I can remember feeling in high school more of a pulling towards wanting to understand who I was as an African-American and how some of the white students became more, you know, Blacks hung with Blacks. You can see the tribalism starting to form. And it almost seemed as if we've gotten to adult life, that people have fallen into these roles or these perspectives that society has put on us. And I'm reminded of an example of one individual, people I would see in New York, you know, later on in my life, in my career as an actor, walking down the street. I remember one person in particular that I saw walking down the street, and I went to say hello to him because I remember from high school, and they kind of looked at me. And a lot of times you can tell that a lot of people see is Black first. And it's unfortunate that that's what they see, as opposed to seeing me. Hey, Eric, you went to high school with. But it really is interesting, I guess, observation that I had about America and what it kind of pushes people to do. And you really have to, I've said this before and I've thought this before, I think people really have to work at educating their children to be liberal. They really have to work at that, because even if you take someone who happens to be white and they grow up in a family that never expressed any racist things at all, and if their parents don't actively work to say all people are equal, you must treat all people equal, they're going to assume, or they would have assumed, that they would have assumed that, yes, I see that, they would have assumed that all black white people are first-class citizens and black people are second-class citizens, merely by what our culture says, merely by what everything we see in our so it's just, we need to, you know, this whole system needs to be changed to work from within. I was watching some videos of Malcolm X the other night in a debate with Earl Farmer and several other people. I believe Malcolm X was born in February as well, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just, well,
yes.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm sorry. Is that correct,
Byron?
He
was assassinated. He's assassinated in February.
Oh, and he was born in May,
born
right?
19? Yeah.
May 19th. So, well, that's the reverse of it. I wish it was the other way. But just in watching these things, certainly Black History Month, and watching these things about Malcolm, it brings up all of these thoughts and these ideas that he was talking about. Let's bring in our other co-host, a legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How are you today?
Hey, good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good evening.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. Happy Valentine's to Kay. Is she there?
Thank you. Have Valentine's Day, Wayne. Same to you.
Okay, thank you. At least I got one person in my corner.
Always.
Yeah, that's good to hear. We should tell some of these knuckleheads I've known. That's another story. Anyhow.
Yes.
No,
yes,
but I have to agree with Eric. I mean, we're really living in troubling times, and this shooting in Florida, I don't think that's clearly what you were talking about, but in some ways there is a nexus, you know, with our society. Why is it that we're getting to this point of decadence? And I know it, you know, the fish stinks from the top. We have to blame Uncle Donald. And, you know, I just don't know what it's going to take. You know, obviously the Republicans, and I don't want to necessarily paint with a broad stroke, but, you know, it just seems like the majority of them are so silent and just blithely unaware of the problems that are going on around us. And it's shameful. And, you know, I go back to that incident with Professor Lewis Gates and the cop up in Massachusetts, and how Obama, you know, brought these two individuals to have the share, you know, a beer at the White House. I don't know if we need more of that. I just don't know what it takes, you know. And it's just shameful. I mean, it's at a point of ad nauseum now with all that is going on. It's sickening. And I don't want to feel like as if there isn't hope. I want to believe there's hope for the future, but society has become so decadent, and everybody's in each other's face. And I still maintain that a lot of it stems from leadership. A lot of the crap we're viewing now did not occur during the past 8 years when Obama was in charge.
But it was
Wayne and Eric,
clearly,
I want to give you a Cleary,
hold on for a sec. Clearly was brewing during those 8 years, and it boiled to the top. You know, just real, if I can interject real quick, Byron, then I'll go to you. You know, when that first happened with Professor Gates, you remember when Barack came out, and he was really kind of hard-lined in saying, you know, some of the remarks he made about the police officer, the idiot police officer who chose to arrest Gates in his house because he was going into his house. And he was really kind of – and he caught a little bit of flack for that. And that's how the beer summit, I think, kind of happened, because he had the – you know, in his anger, in his righteous anger as a black man, as any person who would think of the injustice of arresting someone going in their own house because you're exercising that cop thing and that racial thing, in my opinion. And then he caught a little flack from all of the people who wanted to give him flack about it. So that's how the beer summit came out. This individual never even deserved to be elevated to that level, that he should be sitting up there talking about these issues, this idiot. But you know, that's the world we're in. But, you know, that's the world that a lot of people grew up in. My mother and father grew up in, my grandparents. So I'm more than apt to continue to fight. As a matter of fact, you know, when Obama was elected and they were talking about a post-racial world, I was like, wow, what are we going to do now? You know, we got the war racism. You know, it almost kind of left you without an identity to a certain degree because you're used to so many years of having to fight this oppression. So, you know, this is nothing. We faced this before. It's nothing new. So, you know, but go ahead, Byron. I'm sorry. I got a little long-winded on that, too.
It's okay. No, no, no. Listen, what you're saying is very, very much needed with respect to the topic and the conversation. I just wanted to give you an alarming statistic that the Washington Post wrote about a month and a half ago in an article identifying that out of the 350 million people in America, by way of census tracts, there are over 300 million guns in America. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Out of 350 million people, there are 300 million guns in America. And here's what's even more alarming. Of the 300 million guns in America, over 50% of them are owned by 3% of the population.
Right.
Imagine that.
Byron. Absolutely unacceptable. And here's one other piece of caveat that we've got to put into the mix. Of that 3% that own over 50% of the weapons in this country, do you know who the target is? African Americans predominantly are the target of those individuals who own over 50% of the 300 million weapons in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scary.
You know, now, when you look at that statistic, every day we walk out of our house, we walk out of our house with a target on us. Every single African American in this country, doesn't matter which community you live in. That's a damning statistic.
That's the public enemy logo, and that's just a statistic that's been out for a minute. You know, there's enough guns for every man, woman, and child in the United States. So, I mean, you know, it's an alarming statistic, and you know, the public enemy logo. You know, that's why they chose it, because we are targets. But
you know,
we've done a lot throughout the years. I mean, we come from people that have taught themselves things. I was watching Rosewood, talking about movies. Well, I was watching Rosewood. Weren't we watching that the other night, Ma?
Yep.
I'm watching Rosewood the other night, which is another example of a thriving black community that was burnt to the ground by racist, rabid white people because of a lie that was told by one of the white women in town after she was beat up by one of her white boyfriend that she was cheating with on her husband. If this movie is exactly accurate, but I'm sure it's somewhat accurate for the most part. And it started a whole big race riot because the black people were, they had animosity for the black, towards the black people anyway, because they were so successful. And like Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood was in Florida. They burned this town to the ground and this riot came about. And, you know, the despicable nature of violence, I've said this before on the show, we talked about this, is that in order to treat people with inhumane treatment, as if they're not humans, you have to look at them as they're not humans. You have to create in your mind, this individual before me is not worthy of human compassion and empathy. And if you look at how these people constantly want to separate families, first in slavery, now in immigration, that they seem to be okay with ripping families apart. They seem to have no compassion for children, like who want to just hug their father goodbye, as was exemplified by this Indian professor who was picked up by the ICE authorities while he was taking his kids to school in the morning, took him out and put him in handcuffs. And I understand that his daughter wanted to hug him crying, and one of the ICE agents told her that she could be arrested if she did that. And I would wonder what kind of individual who needs to have a foot in his you-know-what would say that to a child. But this is what they do to our children. You know, and I'm getting off on some Malcolm X stuff, man, because it infuriates me. I can remember having experiences like that where people said certain things to me when my parents weren't around, particularly one incident that I was talking to a friend about earlier. So I'm very cognizant of when I'm around our children and how these other people mm-hmm. talk to them. You just have an example that was on the cover of the Daily News today, or was it yesterday, about the principal who ripped down a poster of Lena Horne that two young girls put up, did work on for Black History Month. And there was another one, another case where Reverend Al had a young man that was named after Malcolm X, X and whatever his last name was, where the principal of the school, the assistant principal, said, oh, that's not really the person that he shouldn't really be, and just disparaged Malcolm X. And the young man spoke about it. I'm sure you guys have seen the footage at the National Action Network. So
yeah, not to cut you off there, Eric, but I think it's important to point out that not only is this kid's name Malcolm X, whatever his last name is, but it's Malcolm Xavier. It's not even about the concept of X, you know, when it comes to the Nation of Islam. So, I mean, for that principle to go that far, to set an example, I mean, I just found that astounding.
Interesting that you mentioned the Rosewood incident in Florida. When I was in Gainesville a couple of weeks ago, I met a woman. Her name is Lizzie Jenkins, and she's the president of the Real Rosewood Foundation Incorporated, and she is a descendant of that incident.
Mm.
Wow.
She told me.
Wow.
She gave me – right? I'm like – we became friends. We talked about Rosewood. She was so anxious to try to tell more of the story. I mean, because you see, for many of us, there's a disconnect. But when you meet someone who is a descendant of that incident, it's not just a history or her story. It's an American tragedy story that's embedded in that woman's psyche, genetically.
Yeah.
Ancestrally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for her to want to continue to tell the story, to keep it alive, when I met her, I was like, I'm with ancestors. My ears just
mm-hmm.
perked up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you still in touch with her?
Yes, I am.
Well,
yes,
let's
I
get
am.
Her on
she
the
gave
show.
Me her, we need to. She gave me her card. I got it.
Okay, let's talk. And let's get an interview with her. Okay? Can you set it up?
Yes. I can set that up.
Okay, then.
Because I told her I was on the Kate Thompson live show, so you know that already.
Thanks, Byron. Okay, now
you
listen,
know
you know the right thing to say, brother.
The right thing to say. It didn't help me at Cuban Pete the other night, though.
Listen, guys, I have a solution to everything.
I love
First
you,
First of all, thank you, Wade. Thank you, Byron. Thank you, Eric. Listen, have you seen Birth of a Nation?
Yes.
The movie that's just out.
Are you talking about the recent Birth?
Yeah, the recent. No, not the Net Turn. The recent Birth of a Nation. Okay.
That's the Net Turn.
Okay, I have an answer to all this. The Black Panther movie. Okay?
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely.
We're getting into movies. The Black Panther movie that is out. Women rule. Men rule. Everybody must see this. I can't wait to see this. Okay? Talk about Malcolm X. Malcolm X, all our heroes, personified. It's a movie.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Yeah.
And it's not nice, I understand. But
Kay, the thing that I think that's really incredible about this movie, and at this particular time, yes, it's Black History Month, and yes, we all are happy that we're celebrating it, the Black History Month, but Eric, you and I are in the entertainment industry per se, and what I really am so excited about is that the story is from an African perspective, even though it's a Marvel comic book story. It is still highlighting from an African perspective in costume, in technical and sci-fi design. It is engaging in a sensibility that we don't get every single day because so many of our movies are carbon copies of a Western European concept and idea. But here we are with Ruth E. Carter. Ruth E. Carter, a Hamptonian, class of 84, is the costume designer.
Oh, she did come out a little bit. Ruth was actually in my class. We were in the same class.
Okay. So, yeah, I know Ruth. And so the thing is, that's so interesting is that from her point of view, and I listened to an interview and a piece that she did as sort of like a documentary on the costumes, is that her research was to go into the tribes, go to Mother Africa, really find the depth and to construct costumes that shared and showed power and strength and courage and heroic concepts that we don't see every day. We don't see these things.
No, not at all. And you know what else, Byron? She talked about, I saw that same interview, you know, that's circulating on the web now, that little brief clip. And she talked about she's been designing for superheroes. She said Malcolm X was a superhero.
Sure.
Martin Luther King was a superhero. So that was
real
deep, and she represented for the Hampton Players. Ruth, she might have graduated a year or two after because she changed her major from literature to speech and drama.
We both went to Hampton.
And
You
we just said that. We just established that. And also, the thing that a lot of people don't know about Ruth is that Robbie Reed, the casting director, also went to school with me. Ray Dow, who was the original Opal in She's Got to Have It, the film, got the role because I introduced her to Spike, as a matter of fact. These are my three classmates, as a number of other people, but those who came in the same year. The thing about people don't know about Ruth is that she is a really good actress. But she chose to go into costume design. And so she's an excellent actress. And the thing about what I like about Black Panther and what really seems to be dope, first you got Michael B. Jordan, Newark's finest, right? They had a screening here in Newark last night that he hosted, and that was really good. But I like the image of the sisters being warriors. You know, they look like that. You know what? You know, them sisters look like and beautiful sisters. I'm talking about not just the traditional and gray. I love the lighter hued sisters right on, you know, but I like the dark skinned sisters too. And I like to see a black woman get respect, beautiful black women with these beautiful dark complexion, badass. We can say that on the internet. They are some badass ladies, you know, and they look like they're putting it down. And certainly Angela looks regal as ever, playing Black Panther's mom. And I also like, you know, I think we should all start doing that cross X across our chest symbol that they have right there that we've seen a little bit, you know. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that movie. I might try to get in there early, see if I could find a ticket early on a Friday morning over here in Jersey. And probably if it's playing at a white theater, maybe all the seats won't be sold out. But you know, there's a lot of white
And that's the other thing, too, that you should mention, Eric, that I, from what I understand, like, it's already projected to outsell anything else in the market.
Yeah. Yes,
that's
it's projected to be one of the best Marvel. My sister told me she was watching an interview with Stan Lee. And he said that he was inspired by the Black Panther movement and you know, the 60s and how black people were catching a little bit of stuff. And that's why he came up with the character. Although I did, when I went on Twitter, was surfing on Twitter the other day, the Black Panther Twitter page. There, you know, you have those people who say Black Panther was white originally, and a dude did have a graphic of an old version of the Black Panther comic, which was a white character. And you know, every time we have something for ourselves, some of these people want to come out and, you know, they just don't like black people feeling proud or talking or two or three of us talking together. So, you know, they were putting disparaging things, a few of them up there. But this movie looks like it is going to be not only something for us, but something for everybody, and just a really well-made movie. And just the vibe I'm getting off of Chadwick, I think this is going to be some of his best work. You know, he looks like he's really – taken on or become that character a little bit. Just his whole swagger, where you see the brother walking, he's the king. Not only is he the king, he's the superhero king. That's what I'm talking about.
All
he's
right.
In the vernacular, he's the king.
Eric, I went to an event about 3 weeks ago that it was right around the same time that the Schomburg had its comic book Black Comic Book Conference at the Schaumburg. And as part of it, the Lexus car company, which is featuring the Black Panther's car in the movie, is a Lexus sedan.
Oh.
And Lexus gave a reception that I attended that was for the Black, basically the Black Panther. And what I wanted to say is that in addition to the free food and the booze and the Lexus car, the beautiful women, the men, everybody there was just beautiful. Okay. They also gave to each one of the participants a copy of five chapters of the a laminated copy of Black Panther comic.
Got
my copy, and it's really amazing because in it you get the, you know, you're introduced to all of the lead writers, all African Americans, the graphic artists, all African Americans, and even, yes, even though it was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, their name is not the biggest name in the book. But the book itself, I'm looking at it as we speak, and it is amazing. It is truly amazing that I mean, you got five chapters of the Black Panther, Soul of a Machine. That's the name of the title on the copy, cover copy. And then, of course, it's featuring the Lexus car that's in the movie, for which they had two versions of it at the event that you could have your step and repeat picture taken with the car. This movie is impacted.
Byron,
just
how
like
long
3 weeks
was
ago. About 3 weeks
really?
Ago.
Yeah, really? No kidding. When were you going to tell us about it, Byron?
Well, you said let's do a movie version, so I think. And my good friend Mike Sargent, Mike Sargent, who you know, and I do his radio show as well, Night Shift on Tuesdays from midnight to 3 a.m. But
so you did it
Mike
out there.
is our African American movie critic, who's paid to write the reviews of these movies, and so he invited me to come to it. I couldn't bring any other guests, but one of the things that, since we're talking about movies this evening, one of the things that's really important to note, back in the day, and when I was running the Frank Silvera Writers Workshop back in 89-90, Warren and Reggie Hudlin to the workshop and needed a space to start the Black Filmmakers Forum, for which I gave them Saturdays at the Frank Silvera Writers Workshop to initiate and inaugurate the Black Filmmakers Forum, for which Reggie and Warren Hudlin are credited for starting. So to this day, it's because I still keep in contact with them, but it's like the importance of our filmmakers. And as I was saying earlier, Eric, you and I are in this industry, and we have come a long way because, from Spike's movie to Malcolm X to Selma last year to the movie that Mr. Parker made with respect to Birth of a Nation, and there's so many more movies that are on the horizon that are about our sensibilities, about our fantasies, about an African-American and African diaspora perspective that nobody else is showcasing. And to step even further, at the Smithsonian last week, the Portrait Museum, where they highlight the presidents and their first ladies, Even that event in which Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's portraits were unveiled, it was the first time, and I've been to the Portrait Museum, but it's the first time I can say I've seen artists from an African diaspora perspective who did not follow the traditional white European concept of our presidents, painting our portraitures of our presidents and their first ladies. This is from a truly different perspective, and it's causing a lot of stuff on the internet. People either like it or hate it, but when you look at that portrait and hear the artists from their own point of view, you begin to realize this is a new idea. This is
I'm glad you brought that up, Byron, because there's been a lot of scuttlebutt, as you just cited, about particularly Michelle Obama's portrait. And
right.
I tell you, to be honest with you, I wasn't really feeling it. Actually, it resembled one of her daughters to me. But I thought Obama's portrait was fitting, you know. Very artistically done, yeah.
My opinion.
But when you look
opinion.
At...
excuse me, Brian.
I'm sorry.
Byron.
I was just going to say, when you
my
look
opinion.
At Michelle's dress, it is of African print. It is of an African concept that is important to recognize. You will never see that in another first lady in the history of this country.
Okay.
Excuse me, Byron.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. It's your show.
I did not like. Yes, I know. I want you to know that, though. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Listen. Michelle Obama is a beautiful woman. I did not like that dress. I did not like the way her skin tone came out. Okay?
Yeah.
Bingo.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Period.
I kind of am in agreement with Michelle's portrait a little bit, but maybe, you know, a lot of times, as with paintings, you know, sometimes you have to see them in real life, you know, to get the full effect. And it seemed that, I think, because of the vibrancy for me in the with Barack's picture with the green, it seemed
yeah.
to make it pop a little bit more for me. And I understand what you're saying about the print, Byron, but Michelle's image, I wanted it to pop a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it seemed kind of be kind of
I can understand
mad.
That.
You understand
yeah.
what I'm saying? Go ahead.
It's important that we have these conversations about our art, because it's not
right.
from a Western European concept. See, that's the thing that
right.
that I want us to get really engage in, and to hear
yeah.
Michelle in her own words identify why she likes it, and what the artist
really
herself. That's right. What the artist herself imparted on that day, and to understand. The, of course, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We'll never have any more or less or more of a conversation with that perspective.
Right.
But I'm just saying, with all due respect to all the other artists, when you go to the Smithsonian's Portraiture Museum of Presidents and First Ladies, they are all of that same Euro
right, that same
Western Western concept. Every last one of them.
And it is that, and that is exactly right what you're saying. I mean, if you look all around America, everything has been sanitized, but developed the entire country, right? Every aspect of
yeah.
our country, our society, and our culture for a great many years has been from that European perspective. And so the fact that, like you're saying, that those two portraits to us are so different and almost jarring, and some people can't see it. You know, when I first saw it, I was like, well, why can't he have even Barack's portrait needed to grow on me. It was striking. I liked it. I was like, that's kind of funky. But then I was like, well, why can't he have the one like the rest of them have? But that is, like you're saying, it's seeing things in a European construct. So you can't really get the feeling of like other cultures unless they have to go through them, like, you know, like our music. Right. It has to go through
yeah.
that European kind of validation from their perspective to be regurgitated by them, right? Watered down, and then they represent the art. You know, we can go everywhere from rock and roll, right, to jazz to hip hop, and we can go with the styles and the dances and you know, everything we do, they steal, not only us, other cultures as well. Everything, all of that stuff is stolen, and then they put their own watered down perspective on it. And it's never quite what they stole it from, so they're always reaching to try to be like us. And the fact that, like you said, we see everything from that perspective, I think that it's so much so that it's almost subconscious in us now, right? It's like, you know, I was watching another video of Malcolm before I came over here, and he was talking about how people, you know, black people want he was talking about how they want to talk to the white man with the sweet talk, you know, and always be nice or whatever. He's like, why? Why do that? Be proud of yourself. Don't approach these people that you need to be trying and let them have them let you into your culture. their culture. Your culture is great enough. You're beautiful enough. You know, that was the speech when he started talking about, look at your skin. Your skin looks like gold. He started talking about their skin, you know. So the fact that we see everything from that perspective, that European, that conquering perspective, you're exactly right, that there's so many cultures in the world that have not been recognized, or when we are exposed to them, certainly the United States and the creations and the inventions of people of color, that it is watered down by the dominant population who not only steals it and claims it for their own, but they water it down and put their influence in it, so it is something other than what it was originally intended. And so it colors, I agree with you, that it colors our perspective about these things.
My opinion about the Michelle Obama's portrait is only because I've seen it, you know, on it, you know, pictures of it. But she's not a white-skinned woman. She's not a light-skinned woman. So why would she, and, you know, I love her, really, but the point is, why couldn't her skin color come out more?
A little more closely.
Yeah, of course. And that's my biggest objection. So therefore, you go into the White House, and therefore you have that. It's almost like a, I don't know, it's almost like a joke. She's a brown-skinned woman. Why not have do that? And to have that picture there, I don't know. I'm just annoyed by it. Well, I just don't feel right about that picture, period, in town.
Okay.
And what did the artist say about it again? Because I didn't quite, you know, I listened, but I was, like, so taken back by the portrait myself, you know. And I understand, Byron,
Wayne,
what you're saying.
Wayne, you know, when things, I've only seen pictures of it, Wayne. I know you weren't directing that to me, but I've only seen pictures of it. So if they have the picture of it in the papers, you know, and in some of the other magazines, you know, they don't show her color. That's important.
Well, I watched it on TV, and I have my glasses on. I know what
that
you saw.
That is important.
Yeah.
It's in shades of gray tone, which when you see her and Michelle, you'll see it with perspective. And the fact that the dress itself is almost constructed like a quilt, which brings more African sensibilities to it. And to hear the commentary of both of the artists now, I mean, like I said, it has stirred up a conversation. Which is important, because we don't usually have this kind of conversation until years from now, in which we've then have seen enough of the artist's work to really appreciate it. But prior to this, most of the other portraits of Barack and Michelle have been done by white artists. It was the same thing with the Martin Luther King statue that's in D.C. It was done by a white artist, and there are folks in Georgia who will tell you they're not happy with that. Or the one that's on the state capitol in Atlanta, Georgia, done by a white artist. So it's like which is interesting, because the conversation that we started off with this evening relative to Black Panther is the fact that we are engaging in our own consciousness of art and sensibilities of Africa that has been colored by Tarzan and all the other movies, you know, that have depicted us as less than human.
Depending on your perspective, I don't think that everybody is,
that's been
dominant in the majority of Black people's lives. You know, those of us that are a little bit more educated and been exposed to things and understand the world, you know, we're not bound by those things. But I do think, for me, like I said, I would like to see the painting in real life to see. And it is art. As far as the statue in D.C. of Dr. King, it looks pretty good. It looks kind of like him. So, you know, certain things like that, when we're talking about white arts doing, I understand the perspective that it should have been given the opportunity, should have been given probably to some Black artists to submit some work and things like that. But for me, first I would have obviously given the opportunity to Black artists first, right? But to me also, too, as you said, art is subjective. It's in the eye of the beholder. If the person is doing good work, you can't really argue with good work. You can argue the balance of the work, you know, who gets the opportunities for the work and to showcase their work, i.e., and then through that, who gets the opportunities to create art from their viewpoint, from their expression, from their life experience, from their culture, i.e., our culture. And the more I think that we're able to liberate ourselves from those European kind of influences and have the influences of other peoples of the world more accepted, certainly since we're all black, I'm talking about our influences from an African perspective or from a black American perspective, I think it'll be better that we get those opportunities. I think the biggest thing about the influence of Barack and Michelle is that creating the opportunities for African Americans. I mean, people had criticisms about his presidency, that he didn't do anything for blacks, and, you know, Eric Michael Dyson, I saw him on a show, Barack didn't do, he was the president of America, but, you know, I think that the opportunities that he created that would help black people in terms of pardoning a lot of brothers who had gone to jail for things that they shouldn't have gone to jail for. So, and having Eric Holder try to, you know, do a lot of those things that brought for that affect African Americans that I don't think that Obama could do as obviously to everybody, you know? So certainly I'd rather have him president than the current dude. And you talk about those pictures being on the wall. I'm sure any pictures of Barack and Michelle Ma are probably not in the White House right about now.
Well, when we went down to see the White House. Wait a minute, Wayne. When we went down to see the White House, when was it, a couple of years ago? Was it 2 years? Of course, Barack wasn't,
They were president. That was the last year. That was the last Christmas card.
Yeah.
We went to see that. And
right.
Barack and Michelle, that was the end of, they were going to be, you know, the election was going on. So that was the last Christmas White House tour that you can make before they left.
The annoying part of that was, you know, that the White House was indeed all white. We didn't see anything black in there. Not a black person's picture was even in the staffing, you know, pictures that we saw partially, you know, nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't seen Michelle's picture in the White House yet, but I intend to see it. But what was shown for them to, I mean, for her skin to be lighter than it is. So you don't see, I mean, you all don't seem to, you know, to get the significance of that to a black woman.
Right.
She is a black woman. She is obviously a black woman.
Right, but I think I agree with you. I think it's the painting. I think it's the intent of the author. The whole painting is rather about her intent. I think the painting, the whole painting is kind of has a tone to it that it's all kind of light in those hues that we were talking about. So, yeah, I understand. I thought it made her look a little light, but what the artist was going for, I see what the artist is going for. So a lot of times when we go to see movies and we look at paintings and we read books,
it doesn't make any difference.
There are two black artists, and it was a black female. I lost my train of thought. Go ahead. What do you got?
Eric.
Well,
Eric.
The only thing I was going to say to that, I think we're getting confused because I think there were two portraits that actually hang in the White House, and these two that were unveiled are going to be in the Smithsonian Institute.
That's right.
Right.
That's
also,
correct.
Yeah.
Eric, I got a question for you. Did you see Wonder Woman? You see the movie Wonder Woman?
No, man, I didn't. That was.
You haven't seen that? The reason why I'm asking this question, because in comparison to a story which obviously from a European Western concept.
Mm-hmm.
Comic book hero. She was introduced in the Batman movie, you may recall.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you ever, because it's on HBO now, so you'll get a chance to see it for free. But I encourage you to take a look at that, because at the point at which it was, everybody who I've, you know, in the movie industry who's seen it, it's so wonderful. Wonder Woman is so absolutely amazing. And when I've watched this movie, and after being able to see some of the rushes of the Black Panther movie, I was completely and totally disappointed in the film because, once again, it was dealing with that, and I'll say it, that Jewish concept of anti-Nazi World War II movie, even though it was trying to give us backstory, forestory. And by the end of the story, I'm thinking, is that all you got for me? That's it? I've seen this before. And I'm not impressed. I am not impressed by Wonder Woman. Okay?
Oh,
and I'm
okay.
Like, so give me, get. I'm ready for that moment. And when I look at, I'm looking at the Barack Obama portrait now, and I'm looking, you know what, the first thing that stunned me when I saw it was the sunlight on his face. I was like, mm-hmm. Look at this. This is
right.
Something you don't see. And to put him into nature, all the presidents,
right.
When I'm telling you, I've been to the
well,
Smithsonian
yeah,
Portrait Museum, and when
I
you
think,
see
yeah,
all those presidents,
too.
They are
yeah,
all
yeah.
stodgy, stale.
Yeah, they're all the same. They're all the same. We've all seen them, or we've seen pictures of them, and they're all the same. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
We've seen pictures of them, but I'm interested in your comment about the Wonder Woman movie. Didn't it take place during the Nazi era, during that time? And,
it does. It does, but they try to move it forward in the last Batman movie because that was made 21st century, and she's Amazon, and of course the Amazon woman is from the jungles of Amazon, all right, and here we are celebrating
yeah.
another white concept of a Superman hero,
hey, bro,
Shiro. That's how they did it.
If they did it to Jesus, everybody else is up for grabs, my brother.
Hello. But once again, did we not just say the artist who depicted what you just said a few minutes ago is that Malcolm X is a superhero? Martin Luther
right.
King Jr.
Right.
is a superhero.
Oh yeah,
that's right. That's right. You want to say Malcolm
okay,
quick.
Mr.
No, no,
that's
no.
right.
It's not real.
Yes.
Listen.
Matt Turner, is he not a superhero?
Brian
Tucson Louverture, is he not a superhero?
Back up, I want to be starting something. Glenda Taylor's a good friend
yeah.
of mine, as you probably well know, and she's written several books, and, you know, I swear by her books. She's an author, a poet. She's got more degrees than, I don't know, so many people. She works for the city of New York, raised a whole lot of money with Olympic Vision. You probably know that already, Byron. Because she is,
yes.
Her name is well known in New York in certain circles. But anyway, she's her latest presentation to her dissertation regarding Michael Jackson. We want to get back to. She
yes.
has sent me a explanation. It's not really an explanation. The title is "Wannabe." In fact, we're going to be having Glenda Taylor, who is an author of Wanna Be Starting Something, Michael Jackson,
excellent.
A social activist.
Yes.
And
yes.
with C.C. Quarles,
absolutely.
who is a young girl who graduated, where did she graduate from? Hampton, right there?
Yeah. She's graduated with us. She'll
appreciate you calling her a young girl, but she's grown up.
A young woman. She is a young woman who did a dissertation on Michael Jackson, and she also discussed that Michael Jackson was part of the movement, really. And Glenda,
yeah.
who's an established writer and an author, she came out with Michael Jackson, and I'm just looking at this short story telling about why she wrote about him. And it says, want to be something, want to be starting something. That's one of Michael's songs.
Right.
Michael Jackson, a social activist. So I'm having Glenda Taylor on with C.C. Quarles, who also did her dissertation on Michael Jackson. They're going to be on the same show together. C.C. is a lot younger than, my friend Glenda. But she's a student, and I'm telling you that her dissertation on Michael Jackson as a social activist,
okay.
as someone who changed, he did it his way, and we're going to be having them on. I think they're scheduled for next week.
Right.
So
Cece went to Hampton with me, and she's graduated, and she's a couple of years behind me, so she's, I don't know.
A young girl.
Maybe she is. I don't know about Mike's social activism, but when we start talking about that, the Quincy Jones interview comes to mind.
Yeah, I was just going to get to that.
When he said Mike stole some music and spilled the beans on quite a few other subjects. I got to read the interview.
Yes, he did.
My ex-partner was telling me about it. But it's just, you know, from what I understand, it's Quincy at a certain age of his life, black man who's been seen it all, and he's let, you know, he's just given his opinion about stuff.
Yeah.
And
so you kind of wonder, though, because, well,
some very,
I don't know. I mean,
stuff about Richard Pryor, Marlon Brando, go ahead, and Marvin Gaye, but, you know, go ahead, Wayne.
No, I you know, the funny thing is, you know, when some people get to a certain point in their lives and they know that they're facing, you know, they're in the twilight, you know, they're entering that age where they know that they don't have really too much left, and they just let it rip like that. Sometimes I just kind of question what's behind it, or if even half the stuff that they say is factual, you know. And
I just think
but
don't
we
care.
All are like that. We all have our moments, you know. I mean, your mother had a Frankie Crocker moment about 30 minutes ago, and I said, I laughed to myself. But I said, boy, Kay's still with it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to leave that. I'm going to just leave it right there, you know? And play back the show,
know
you'll know what
Wayne.
I'm talking about. You
Wayne.
Know?
Wayne. You know what?
Yeah.
I know a lot.
I was just going to say now, go ahead, Kay, go ahead.
No.
No, go ahead.
No, no, Byron, you go right ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, in context to our timeline here, of our age, I just want to remind folks, because we are talking about films and sci-fi in particular, and I want to remind you, Eric, you can co-sign on this yourself, the woman who wrote The Matrix and Terminator happened to be an African-American woman.
Yeah, we were in contact with her quite a bit. We were in contact with her quite a bit at one time when we were doing the show out of another location. And I'm sure she did write that and present it. There are certain things
she
that
won her
don't
case.
Seem to make sense. She won her case and they paid her off.
Right.
Talking about doing other things. So I don't know all the details of it, but I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you know, Hollywood, they always steal people's stuff if you don't have the right connections and you're not in the right position. And but she seems to be a little bit extreme sometimes when you talk to her. I know
I've seen her interviewed.
And we had some other people on. So listen, guys, we've come to the end of the show. That was a lively discussion, and I'm looking forward to seeing Black Panther. I know you guys
absolutely
are too.
Yes.
We want to say thanks, everybody, for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show, live, and it's also archived that you can find find and listen to anytime you want. I want to say thank you to our resident guest co-host, our other co-host, but Brother Byron Saunders. Byron.
Yes, sir. Peace and love and cornbread. How about that? It's Black History Month.
Peace and love and heritage. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Wayne.
That's Byron. Well, thanks, Byron.
You're welcome.
All right, bro. And Mr. Wayne Gilman, thank you again, Mr. Legendary Newsman. It's always a pleasure. And you got to come back to Cuban Pizza and we'll work
out. Oh, yeah,
out.
Man. You know, I won't mention your mother's name, but, you know, I'll be back there. The food was great.
Right?
The women were great. The drinks were great. You know.
There you go. Can't ask for much more. All right, Wayne Gilman, Legendary Newsman. Next week, sir.
All right. All the best.
All right. Thank you. Take care. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live or archived. I'm Citizen Payne, and you
and
are.
And I am Kay Thompson Payne. Join us next week, every Wednesday, 8 to 9.
All righty, everybody. Go see the Black Panther. Trying to play some music for y'all.
Black Panther movie playing.